Okay, welcome back. Luke here. This episode is going to be a little bit about training frequency, but then I want to transition it into talking more about probably like the most important thing when you're writing a program, which is creating constraints or limits. So to start with, the whole reason this came about is because I get quite frequent questions, and one came from my brother-in-law recently about a training split. So he had a pal who was doing like push-pull legs, push-pull for a five-day training split across the week. And he wanted to know if this was any good for building muscle. And I basically said, yes, it is. But there's lots of other ways you can set up training that are probably just as good. And there's not really a training split that is ideal. So I said to him, look, the reason why it probably works quite well is because it allows you to train a muscle group more frequently than once a week. And that means that each time you train that muscle, it's going to get your best effort, and therefore it works really well. But similarly, so does a lot of other splits. You could do upper lower, you could do full body splits, you could just come up with completely random splits that at least allow you to train a muscle group more than once a week. And even if you only trained a muscle group once a week, it still works pretty well. It's probably not optimal. I'll get into the science of that in a second, but it still works pretty well. And so I really wanted to impart this sort of principle of training frequency and the training split, because I see it so often that people get really caught up on the training split. What split they should use, which one is ideal, why is this one better than the other one or worse? And like I mentioned, there aren't really any ideal training splits. It's more about the context of them, and it's more about hitting that principle of training a muscle group relatively frequently and being able to put in a high amount of effort. So I'll refer to the literature now, and we can talk a little bit more about what the science actually says. So just to kind of back up a little bit, the training frequency really just talks about how often we're going to do an exercise or a muscle group across the week. So you might do some kind of split where you do two upper body sessions and two lower body sessions, and then you're training each muscle group twice a week. So then we want to ask, okay, well, what frequency is best for muscle growth and what is the best split? Now, there's a good meta-analysis that I'll refer to here by the people at Stronger by Science. So they looked at 13 different studies, I think, from memory. These were all studies that were volume equated. In other words, all of the studies involved the same amount of volume, but they had a different training frequency. So just as an aside, one of the issues that you run into sometimes is that some people will use a higher frequency to do more volume. So if you're going to train, you know, if you're going to do 15 sets of legs every week, then maybe you can do that in one session, but if you do two sessions, maybe you're capable of doing 20 sets a week because you're just spending more time training them. And then obviously that's an unfair comparison. We're not really looking at the frequency of training, then we're kind of looking at how much volume you're doing. Now, just as an aside, that is a potential advantage of higher frequency programs. If you have 3 days available to train your chest, then potentially you can just fit in more volume across the week. And then obviously that's going to be beneficial for you. But if we're looking at just how often we should train by splitting up the same amount of volume, say you had to do 15 sets a week on a muscle group, is it better to do that across 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days? That's what this meta-analysis looked at. So all these studies were volume equated, these 13 studies. And they found that essentially the more frequently you train a muscle group, the better the results. Now, the effects were not like extremely high, but they were definitely there and definitely significant. Now, the question that I had is like, why? And there's a couple of different things we can think about here. The first is that a higher frequency allows more volume load to be done. So we have different ways of measuring training volume. None of them are perfect. But one way of doing it is what I've been talking about so far, which is how many sets do you do on a body part? How many working sets or how many difficult sets done close to failure? That's typically how this is measured in the research. And the reason why people use that is because there are many different rep ranges that lead to a similar amount of muscle growth, provided they're done to failure. So that means if we use the number of sets done to failure per week, we can compare different rep ranges very easily. That has a downside though, and volume load is another way of measuring volume. So volume load is your classic sets times reps times weight. It's expressed as like a total tonnage of how much actual weight you lift. Now, the disadvantage of using volume load is that higher rep sets will always accumulate much more training volume. So if you do sets of five, you're going to get much lower volume on, as terms of volume load compared to doing like sets of 15. And those sets, if they're done to failure, we've seen in the literature, can be equally stimulating of muscle growth. So it's really difficult to compare different sets across different rep ranges when you use volume load. But volume load does appear to be predictive of muscle growth. In other words, the more volume load you do over time, the more muscle growth you'll tend to get. Now, what I'm talking about here is if you were to compare, let's say you're doing sets of 10 to failure, and you do a set of 10 to failure and you achieve one working set to failure. And then you do next week another working set to failure, and the week after another working set to failure. Those are all one working set to failure, and therefore if we're using sets done to failure as our measurement of volume, they're all equal. They're all one set to failure. But the actual amount that you lift across all of those sets might be different. In the first week, maybe you do one set of 10 to failure with 10 reps of 100 kilos, right? So you get 1,000 kilograms lifted in terms of your volume load. Your sets times reps times weight lifted is 1,000. In week two, maybe you do an extra rep. In week three, maybe you put the weight up and you do that extra rep. And so although these are all sets done to failure, the actual amount of volume load you're lifting is different. It's increasing week by week. And so although volume load doesn't really allow for comparison between very high rep sets and very low rep sets, because the volume load is just completely different, it does allow us to track our progress to some extent if we're using a sort of fixed rep range. And so we know that increasing volume load over time is predictive of muscle growth. Essentially, you're doing more work even though the number of working sets done is the same. And that's important to note. So let's take it back to training frequency. If you spread out your training days, you spread out your volume across different more than one day a week, your volume load is typically going to be higher because your performance on each lift is a little bit better. Imagine this, that you had to do, say, 10 sets of squats across a week. It's unlikely that you could use the same load for the same number of reps across all 10 of those sets if you had to do them in one day, right? At some point, you're going to get so fatigued that you either have to reduce the number of reps you're doing, or you have to reduce the load that you're lifting. That's pretty obvious. But if I took those same 10 sets of squats and I spread them out over 3 days throughout the week, perhaps I can maintain the same number of reps on each set. Maybe I can even maintain the same weight across each set. And so across the week, my volume load is actually higher. You know, my sets times reps times load, because the reps and the load are staying really high. So again, it's still 10 working sets across the week. But if I spread them out over 3 different days, I can achieve a higher volume load across the week. And that is somewhat associated with muscle growth. So that's one explanation. Higher frequencies basically allow you to maintain your performance better on each set, meaning that your overall volume load, your sets times reps times load, is higher, even with the same number of working sets. So that's one explanation. Another explanation could be to do with how the molecular process of muscle growth works. So whenever you train a muscle group, basically what you do is you boost the rate of muscle protein synthesis, and that stays elevated for a certain amount of time. In many cases, for more advanced lifters, for moderate volumes, it actually doesn't stay high for very long, maybe 24 hours. But generally speaking, even in the most extreme cases, your muscle protein synthesis, that increase lasts for like 48 to 72 hours. So the idea then is if you train a muscle more frequently, you're getting more frequent boosts of muscle protein synthesis across the week, and therefore you're going to get more muscle growth. Now, we don't know if either of those explanations are accurate for this finding of increased frequency, increasing muscle growth. It might be a combination of the two. But there is that association there. When it comes to the optimal frequency, you might be tempted to say, well, just train as frequently as you can. Maybe full body sessions are best. But this is going to tie into the second idea that I wanted to talk about in this podcast, which is constraints. This is the most important concept when it comes to programming. So again, I'm going to tell you a little story. I have a post that I made of how to write a great program. And the funny thing is, I tended to get a lot of programmers come across that and say, oh, I thought this was about programming for computers and stuff. Sorry to disappoint. I don't know anything about that. But it's about writing a decent training program. And in some ways, it was a bit of a frustrating post for a lot of people. Like, it was really helpful for a lot of people because there are some basic principles involved with writing a decent program. And some of the things I said were, you know, train close to failure, like 8 RPE or 2 reps in reserve, like that's pretty good. You should do like a decent amount of volume, like not too much, not too little. You should train each muscle group at least twice a week. Like, it was pretty basic stuff that wasn't like particularly insightful. I think a lot of people wanted to probably get like, this is the program that you need to use, right? But what I said was, identify your main goal, write out a perfect week, and then just prune and prioritize. And generally what we're trying to do is train each muscle group twice a week. We're trying to hit an RPE of like 8 or 9 on most sets. You can rest like 2 to 3 minutes and use at least a couple of different exercises per muscle group. And again, I think some people found that was really helpful because it's just a few principles that you can use to write a good program. But another group of people were a bit frustrated that it's like, well, that is not too specific. And the reason why it's not too specific is because it's not really constrained by anything. It's like if you just said write a program, I mean, there's a million different ways you can do it. I don't know if you guys have ever tried this. Any coaches out there? When ChatGPT first was like hitting its straps, I'm sure every coach out there went over there and tried to see if it could make a meal plan or make a training program. Now, if you type in onto ChatGPT and you say, look, I want you to write a training program 4 days a week for bodybuilding, you know, off you go. It writes a really fucking shit program. The program sucks. It's just bad. And I still think that AI is like not great at writing programs unless you provide it a lot of constraints. And this is the same thing I'm talking about. You need some direction to go in because there's a lot of different ways to program. And so the constraints are super, super, super important. And in fact, they're really helpful if you have constraints. You know, like a good training program is completely contextual. So what do I mean by constraints? Well, okay, you might say, based on what I've just told you with this research, is that it's better to train your muscle groups in full body sessions like 6 days a week. But you've got constraints with people. There are people out there who can't train that often. I'm one of them. Maybe my constraint is that I can only train 3 days a week. Well, then the question of the optimal split becomes a much different answer. It probably becomes, well, it should probably be maybe 3 full bodies or push-pull legs or push-pull, push, and then the next week you do pull, push, push, pull, push, pull, sorry, right? Or maybe your constraint is that you only have 45 minutes to work out. Okay, well, that completely changes how I'm going to program. Now in the program, I'm probably going to have lots of supersets. I might have shorter rest periods than are optimal. The amount of volume I can do is different. Another constraint could be that you only have limited amount of equipment. Maybe someone's training. I've got a couple of clients. They train at home. They've got basically rings and some kettlebells. Okay, well, there's a lot of exercises I can't give you. Maybe our progression schemes are more based around increasing the number of reps you do than the amount of load you do. Maybe the progressions are more based around the tempo, whereas normally I recommend to try and measure your progressive overload through an increase in number of reps or an increased load lifted. Well, maybe now we have to use tempo as a variable. Maybe we have to use different exercise variations. Maybe we have to take an incline push-up and then make the angle different so that it's more difficult next week. So the constraints really determine what makes a good training program, and the constraints determine what makes a good training split. So I guess that's kind of the hidden message in all of this is that, okay, the research is pointing towards a certain training split being maybe a little bit more effective, but within that, there's a lot of different ones that can work. And really, what matters most is what constraints are you under, because the training split is completely defined by how often you can get to the gym and how long you can be there, right? So I hope that's helped a little bit, but if I were creating a training program, the first thing I would do is start looking for constraints. So some of the constraints are obvious. I've already said, you know, how many days can you train? Like, what equipment's available to you? Things like training age are also one that's sometimes overlooked. If someone's not super experienced, then maybe the exercises you choose, the amount of volume you give them is going to be more simple, more basic. Another thing that a lot of people don't think about are personal preferences. And for me, that's probably one of the biggest constraints. I make a big effort to try and find out what people's personal preferences are, because maybe someone doesn't want to train full body. Maybe someone doesn't like a certain exercise. I've had clients come to me and say, do not program supersets for me. I don't like doing supersets. I like focusing on one exercise at a time. Cool. Well, I mean, that's a constraint. That's what I have to deal with now. That means if they can only train for 45 minutes and they've said supersets are out, well, what do I have available to me? I have straight sets. Maybe I have some drop sets. Maybe we have shorter rest periods. But that's what I have to work with. And that's a good thing. It actually enables me to make a better program. Right? So you really have to pay attention to that stuff, because it is how we end up taking these analyses and we end up making them practical. And so again, I'll just reiterate, find the constraints, because the constraints are the most important thing you need to know to write a good training program. Okay, I'll leave it there. Leave me a like or whatever, rate it 5 stars, please. You can also contact me if you wanted to discuss the episode at all. You can message me on my Instagram. I'll put it in the link below, or shoot me an email. All right. Thanks, folks. Catch you next time.